Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Light of Truth broadcast with Michael Boldea.
Okay. All right. I guess it's working now. So, yes, what an intro. Bravo. Welcome to the Light of Truth radio broadcast. I am your host, Michael Boldea. These are the perils of trying to do it live. We had no choice in the matter. My wife was busy with other things today. So I had the girls. We went out for breakfast. We had some fun. And here I am, ready and raring to go to do the program, because we have a lot of things to discuss, a lot of things to talk about. And I will be getting back into 1 Samuel 17 because, I think it's a timely message. It's timely on many fronts. One of which is the need for bravery in the face of overwhelming odds. Sometimes fear can paralyze us. Sometimes fear can make us react like deer in the headlights, just stand there and do nothing. And most of the time, that's the worst possible thing we can do. So, before we get into the continuation of 1 Samuel 17, however, I'm sure that some of you, if not all of you, have heard that Herman Cain has passed on. He has died. And every news outlet is reporting that he has died after a battle with the coronavirus. As is the case with the news nowadays, that's only half true. What most of them, if any of them, are failing to report is that Herman Cain had survived stage 4 colon cancer, and it had actually spread to his liver. He was given a 30% chance of survival back in 2006. So because of the chemo, because of this invasive surgery, because of everything that he went through, Herman Cain had the immune system of a 23-hour mayfly. He had no immune system, no immunity to speak of. So, yes, he was considered an increased risk. And because he was already compromised, well, it was his time to go. But everyone's having a field day. Oh, look, somebody famous actually died from it. He was 74. He survived stage 4 cancer. And it was his time to go. That's the most I'll get into it. But I couldn't let it stand for you to assume that he had died of coronavirus exclusively, because that is what is being broadcast. That is what is being put out there. No, the man had a compromised immune system. The man had issues that exacerbated the condition. and he was 74. I know that doesn't seem very old to those of you that are 85, but 74 is a good age. My grandpa passed away at 65, you know. My mom passed away at 42. So if you've been walking the earth for 74 years, you've had a better run than many. So no, I have not changed my position on the fear-mongering. I have not changed my position on, oh my, we're all going to die. Look, we're all going to die eventually, sure. If you know yourself to be immunocompromised, take precautionary measures. But when you begin mandating wholesale that people do certain things, and this is one of the things that I found comical and just stunning in its irony. The fact that Donald Trump refused to be the tyrant they all think he is and, you know, legislate or have an executive order mandating masks throughout. Look, it goes to show who the tyrants are, because I just found out as I was driving in to the studio that Wisconsin has now belatedly decided to join this dance of the macabre. And as of Saturday, we're supposed to wear masks everywhere, I guess. I don't know. I'm hoping and I'm praying that individual sheriff's departments won't enforce the mandate because it's not a law. Again, we need to make something just very clear. Every edict that governors issue are mandates. They are not laws. Because there's a lot of Karens out there who are just nibbling their fingernails to bloody stumps. What do you mean you're not going to enforce the law? Nope, it's not a law, madam. It's a mandate. Say it with me, M-A-N-D-A-T-E, mandate. That means it's not a law. So, again, the people of Wisconsin now understand that elections have consequences. Hopefully you're happy with your decision, kids. But there's other things that I wanted to get into because the situation doth begin to look grim. And with these new shutdowns and mandates and all these other nuisances, it's not looking to improve anytime soon. And real people are having their lives destroyed. Real people are having their businesses go under. Real people are unable to make their mortgage payments. As of July 8th, 32% of U.S. households missed July's housing payment. Just consider that. 32%. 3 out of 10 people who are homeowners in these United States missed their payment. Now, as of this moment, there are certain states, and I think that it's a federal issue where there's a moratorium on people being evicted. There's a moratorium on foreclosures. But that has to end at some point because the big money people aren't just going to sit by and let, you know, 32% of U.S. households live in a home rent-free or mortgage-free, they're going to try to make their money back somehow. This is going to get ugly. There's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way to soften the impact. This is going to get ugly. 32% of U.S. households missed their July housing payment. And that's not the only grim news of the day. The U.S. economy also suffered its sharpest downturn on record. It shrank in the second quarter by the fastest rate since the government began keeping track of gross domestic product after World War II. So when do we say that the cure is demonstrably worse than the disease? When do we come to that conclusion? Because right now, kids, you've given power over to tyrants, and they're going to keep the power for as long as they can. And the only way that they'll let loose the reins is if they're forced into it. So you already have 3 out of 10 people not making their mortgage payment in July. You have the U.S. economy that contracted at a 32.9% seasonally adjusted annualized rate from April through June. You have another, 1.4 million people filing for unemployment. And you have Congress and the Senate talking about another stimuli. Well, I understand that people like free money. I understand people like getting the extra $600 every week for doing nothing. But you can't pump this much currency onto the market without devaluing said currency. So we're looking at another perfect storm. We're looking at people without jobs. We're looking at inflation, if not hyperinflation. We're looking at the mother of all just mortgage foreclosures. We're looking at people not being able to make rent. We're looking at businesses not being allowed to reopen. We're looking at governors overreaching, arresting taxpaying citizens for wanting to survive. And there's one thing I noticed about all of these mask mandates throughout the country, because there's one in D.C. now, there's one in Florida, there's one here in Wisconsin. The mandates exempt employees. The mandates exempt people working for the system. So not only has every state employee been drawing a paycheck throughout all of this mess, now they are exempted from wearing muzzles in public. All the while, if you're a taxpaying citizen who was forced to shut down his business because the governor said you had to, you're now going to get fined on top of that by some busybody or other for not wearing a mask. There's a larger implication here that I need you to understand, because some of you still don't want to see where we're headed. Well, you have no choice. Every cop that tickets someone for not wearing a mask, for every individual that feels as though they got the short end of the stick while government employees are still raking in the cheddar, animosity towards authority will continue to increase exponentially. In layman's terms, once law-abiding citizens, once normal folk, as it were, once taxpayers, once the blue-collar peoples who weren't even a blip on the screen as far as animosity towards the man, will now have an open hatred towards the man. We've discussed this at length in previous episodes. There are law enforcement officers who are very zealously overreaching. There are certain law enforcement officers who are just being a nuisance for the sake of being a nuisance, like going and knocking on a lady's door because she let her kid outside for 5 minutes. This happened in Wisconsin some few weeks ago when this, can you believe it's only July? Well, it's going to be August in a couple days. Yeah, this happened, I think, in March when the whole thing started shutting down. This lady let her kid outside for 5 minutes and the cops knocked on her door demanding her name and her address and wanting to see ID and all this nonsense. This leaves a bad taste in decent people's mouth. So now we have a state mandate in Wisconsin. I've already seen whispers and I've already seen innuendo that sheriffs do not intend on enforcing it. They do not intend on ticketing people for not wearing masks, which is a good thing. But see, we have the reach around where every store is now demanding that you wear a mask. So if they can get away with demanding this, what else will they be able to get away with? That is the question, because they're not going to stop pushing until they're pushed back. Understand this. That's the whole premise of tyranny. Until there's pushback, they'll continue to push. Who was it? That little rat-faced doctor who can't throw a baseball. Dr. Fauci. This morning or last night, he said that, well, you know, goggles might be a good idea now. So you're going to see people walking around with goggles and face masks. And the newest thing that I read, somebody forwarded it to me on Facebook, was that they say because the virus floats, apparently, people over 6 feet tall are more apt to get it than those that are shorter. So the next logical, reasonable thing is people walking around with goggles and masks, but not walking, scurrying along on their knees. All the while, Dr. Fauci, you know, threw a baseball and took his mask off, and so did his significant other, I'm assuming. And they were having a gay old time in an empty stadium. But then again, he's the expert. He's the specialist, and we have to trust the specialists. Look, these people will continue to push until something very bad happens. And I'm going to use a very gross analogy, and I apologize in advance, but it's the only one that I can come up with. Have you ever popped a pimple? One that's really, really full, the juicy kind. I don't know why I have this, but my mom used to pop pimples that when I was a teenager on my face. And for some reason, I always remember that. It was gross, but it was oddly satisfying when you felt the pressure release, when you felt the pop. Right now, you, the average citizen, are the pimple. Overreaching elected officials and non-elected officials are the ones applying pressure to the pimple. Because they don't believe that the pimple is ripe enough to pop. And this is a miscalculation on their part. Because most people still remember vividly where we were supposed to flatten the curve for 2 weeks. And then everything would go back to normal. And here we are, beginning of August. And it's only getting worse. So they keep applying pressure, and they keep applying pressure. And the two things they don't know is how much of the juicy stuff is inside the pimple and how big the explosion is going to be. Because they've never taken that into account, never believing that the pimple was going to pop. They think that CNN and MSNBC will provide enough of a cover for them, continually going, trust the experts, trust the experts. Well, the experts said one thing yesterday, and they're saying one thing today, and there's a bunch of other experts that are saying something contrary to the other experts. But which ones are we supposed to believe? Well, the ones that CNN approves of course. The ones that will do the most harm to this administration. So, of course, Dr. Fauci, believe him. Put on some goggles and get on your knees. Start crawling around, especially if you're over 6 foot tall, because that's when it'll get you. And even if it gets you, you're still at a 99.8% survival rate. So this is madness. This is fear overriding reason, fear overriding logic, fear overriding evidence. And any doctor that's willing to stand up and contradict Dr. Fauci is getting scrubbed off the internet. And it's not just one or two doctors. There are hundreds of doctors going, this is kind of crazy. There are certain prophylactics that seem to work. There are certain prophylactics that almost guarantee survival. But that would mean they didn't have control over you anymore, wouldn't it? That would mean you weren't walking around with goggles and a mask and hunching over because you want to be 5'11 and not 6'2. And while all this lunacy is going on, real problems are on the horizon. Consumer spending crashed at an annualized rate of 34.6% in the quarter. And it was led by a 43.5% annualized decline in spending on services. Consumer spending on goods fell at an annualized rate of 11.3%. Private sector investment fell 49%, driven down by a 38.7% decline in residential investment. See, what this is telling me is that the engine is starting to seize up. See, even if you have an old car, you turn on the engine once in a while, you rev it up a little bit, you're supposed to warm it up, because otherwise it'll seize up. The mechanism, the inner workings, will just lock in place. And this is what these numbers are telling me. By no means am I an economist, but hey, every economist got it wrong for the last 4 years, so I might as well throw my hat into the ring, huh? So with this, you will see a rise in suicides. You will see a rise in murder suicides. You will see a rise in homelessness. You will see a rise in drug addiction. You will see a rise in alcoholism. You will see a rise in spousal abuse. You will see a rise in child abuse. Because the news media continues to pump fear nonstop, full bore, 24/7. Into the ears and hearts of everyone that turns them on. And this would seem like a good segue for 1 Samuel 17. Because Goliath was a visual aspect. The men of Israel were gathered together. And this giant of a man came out and he was so visually imposing that he struck fear into the hearts of an entire army. And as we go through this, you'll realize that he did this every morning. Because you have to keep pumping the fear. Goliath didn't just come out once. He would come out every morning and say the same exact thing. But let's get into it. I know I was a little long-winded last week. Probably going to happen again this week. We made it. We're here. It's kind of nice out. Maybe 76 degrees starting Saturday, apparently. I'm going to get a bunch of tickets. So, you know, make hay while the sun shines. Let's begin from the beginning, shall we, since we only got into one verse. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Sochoh, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Sochoh and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. So Saul and the men of Israel acknowledged the threat. They knew it was real. They knew they could not ignore it. They knew they could not turn their head. They knew they couldn't pretend it wasn't there. So they were gathered together in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. Up until this point, the people of Israel, or at least the men of Israel, were ready to defend what was theirs. The men of Israel were drawn up in battle array against the Philistines. They were ready to fight. So, looking at the situation today, the church hasn't even done what the Philistines did. We have not drawn up in battle array. We're still pretending as though we don't have an enemy. We're still pretending as though the darkness has not gathered its enemies together to battle. We're still pretending as though the good times will roll forever. So at least Israel saw the threat for what it was. At least Israel took some sort of action, comparatively speaking. They drew up in battle array against the Philistines. They were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah, because they knew that they couldn't just roll over and die. They knew they just couldn't wave the white flag of surrender to the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. This is important. I know you're not seeing it, but you will in a minute. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. If you think the light can have a meeting of the minds with the darkness, you are fooling yourself. If you think that the good can come to some sort of consensus with evil, you are fooling yourself. This is a depiction of how you as a believer should be compared to those who've given themselves over to the darkness. You on a mountain on one side, they on a mountain on the other side, a valley between you. Not commiserating, not shaking hands, not going to the same bar. Not enjoying the same activities. Not participating in parades. Not validating perversion. You on a mountain on one side, they on a mountain on the other side with a valley between you. Light and darkness cannot coexist. There is no common ground to be had with the devil. I'm going to repeat that. There is no common ground to be had with the devil. And as we discussed last week, anything good came of this entire thing. It's that everyone has picked a side. And the sides are clearly delineated. One on one side, one on the other side, with a valley between them. Because this is one of the enemy's greatest ruses. Well, you know, you give a little, we give a little, and we meet in the middle. But is that biblical? That's the question we have to answer. Is it biblical for you to give a little and for them to give a little and to meet in the middle? Because you know what? They're never going to give any and you're going to give all. And eventually you're going to end up on the mountain with them. You'll cross the valley, climb their mountain, stand there with a goofy grin on your face, waving a rainbow flag, thinking that you're tolerant, thinking that you're loving, thinking that you're doing something noble and good. There will always be a valley between the light and the darkness. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Now, if you're wondering how big 6 cubits and a span is, I'm going to Google it. 6 cubits and a span would be approximately 9 feet and change. That there is a big boy, as the kids like to say, or as certain people have said of me, not so much in height, but perhaps in girth. That's neither here nor there. But a little over 9 feet is a substantive human being. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and the weight of the coat, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. Now, I don't care how much a shekel weighs. 5,000 shekels of bronze is a lot of bronze. But just so we're, you know, I guess within sort of a idea, it was just really heavy. All right, 5,000 shekels of bronze, give it an ounce, 5,000 ounces. And that was just his mail. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. So, for anyone that looked upon Goliath, they not only saw a giant, but they saw a giant so well armored and fortified that there really was no weakness, there was no weak point, there was no weak spot. There's an old saying, you've got to find the chink in their armor. Apparently, Goliath didn't have any. He had bronze armor on his legs. And he also had a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now, the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. Now, I come from a place where people in the country still have weaver's beams in their homes. And so I know how thick those things are. Looking at Goliath, fully armored, his eyes, his size, his menacing appearance, these things would have struck fear into the heart of layman and soldier alike, and it did. So here were the Philistines on a mountain on one side and Israel on a mountain on the other side with a valley between them. Here was Goliath with his bronze helmet and coat of mail and bronze armor and spear, and he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servant and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And this speech highlights the hubris of Goliath. He thought himself unbeatable. That's the extent of it. He didn't think there was anyone capable of beating him. This is how sure of himself he was. Send anybody. We'll duke it out. Last man standing wins the prize. Now, this is before David enters the scene. And I have a question. What if someone else would have stepped up? What if someone else would have walked in the valley and faced Goliath? Do you not believe they would have had victory because of their boldness? Do you not believe that they would have had victory because they trusted that God would be with them? Because if you're standing there looking at a guy that's 9 feet and change, wearing a Volkswagen Beetle's worth of armor, you have to acknowledge, at least to yourself, that if victory would be yours, said victory would not be accomplished due to your skill, your prowess, or your abilities. And so if any soldier would have stepped up, they would have stepped up with the full assurance that it would be God helping them win the battle. They would have stepped up with the full assurance that it would be God helping them win the day. So, even though the army of Israel did draw up in battle array, not one among an entire army had enough faith in the God they purported to serve to step forward and say, I will fight. Not one of them believed. Not one of them believed that they could win. Not one of them believed that they could be victorious. And that begs the question, what kind of faithless people were these soldiers? If just the sight of Goliath made them greatly afraid, everyone from the king on down. It says in verse 11, when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Why? If they really did have faith in the God they purported to serve, why were they dismayed and greatly afraid? It's a good question, isn't it? Because I'm running across more and more believers that share the sentiment of Saul and Israel. They are dismayed and greatly afraid because they don't believe Goliath can be vanquished. They are dismayed and greatly afraid because they don't have enough faith in their God to believe that if they take a step of faith, if they say, I will defend, if they say, I will fight, if they say, I will stand, they don't believe that God will stand with them and give them victory. So what are we good for? Standing on one side of the mountain, looking at the devil on the other side of the mountain? And every time he sneezes, we quiver. We shake in our boots. We become dismayed and greatly afraid. They can't kill you twice. So, if we're not standing up for truth, if we're not standing up for Christ, if we're letting the darkness trample all over us, could it be perhaps we love this life too much to surrender it? We love this life too much to forfeit it? Because it must have dawned on these soldiers that if nobody went out to fight Goliath, eventually the Philistines would advance. And if the Philistines advanced, it's not as though all of them would survive. It would have been war. War is bloody. People die in war. But see, they were shell-shocked. They were paralyzed. They looked at the situation, and they were dismayed and greatly afraid. And in their defense, I'm not saying they didn't have a reason to be dismayed. I'm not saying they didn't have reason to be fearful. But you need to juxtapose your fear with the power of the God you serve. You need to say to yourself, my flesh is afraid, but my God is greater than my fear. My flesh is dismayed, but I give it all to Him. And He refreshes me and gives me peace. We are in for some dark times. And we can either be dismayed and greatly afraid, or we can be that one that takes the first step of faith. We can be that one that sets aside their fear and realizes He may be big. He may be well suited. He may have a really cool armor and a nice helmet. But underneath it all, he's still a man. Big man, but still a man. See, one of the enemy's greatest tricks is that he projects strength when he doesn't have it. Right now, this is what is happening. The enemy is projecting strength even though he doesn't have it. He's trying to trick you into submission. He's trying to trick you into bondage. He's trying to trick you into silence. As yet, the enemy does not have the strength that he projects. But if we continue to be silent, if we continue to go along to get along, if we continue to believe the lie that, hey, if we give a little, they'll give a little, then eventually, the power that the enemy projects will be his. And then you will see how he will wield it. We're going to continue with 1 Samuel 17 next week, because we're getting close to the end of the program, even though we were a few minutes late. Again, technical difficulties, live shows. But as a friend of mine who had a car that was broken down more often than not, every time I'd ask him for a ride, and we'd have to sit by the side of the road and wait for a tow truck or wait for somebody to come pick him up, he'd shrug his shoulders and say, well, yeah, you get what you pay for. It was a free ride, and I appreciated it. So my apologies for our being a little delayed. I know that Gino tried his best, and we were able to do this. But I wish I could sit here and give you better news or be a little more happy. But the situation is dire from where I'm sitting because numbers don't lie. Now, if there is one bright spot, because I have to leave you with something, I guess we could all become Dutch, because the Dutch government on Wednesday advised the public that there will be no mask mandate to slow the spread of coronavirus, stating that their effectiveness remains unproven. So if you have a Dutch citizenship, I guess the Netherlands is the place to be, huh? With that, thank you all for listening. Thank you for joining us. May God bless you. May God keep you. Lord willing, we will be together again next week, and we will continue our dissection of 1 Samuel 17, because there's still a lot to unpack. We haven't even met David yet. So thank you again. Gino, if you've got anything to say, the floor is yours.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Just letting everyone know, Saturday night, August 1st, we will have our Stand 2020 rally in Wisconsin Dells. Mike will be sharing, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say in front of our state leaders that are coming. It's at Trappers Turn Country Club in Wisconsin Dells. We still have a few tickets left. Even if you're out of state and you want to attend, it's free. Other than people are paying for a fish fry dinner. That's the only cost, $22. We have Michael coming. We have Dale Schmidt, the sheriff that literally went out on a limb initially when they were talking about health department people going and tracking people following mandates, as Mike said. And thankfully, Dale Schmidt went against that in Dodge County, and then Jefferson County followed suit. And Dale is a very solid pioneer in our state on conservative issues. He will be there Saturday night. The head of Trump Campaign Wisconsin, Andrew Iverson, will be there. Carlton Huffman, who does the works with the Washington office, will be there, hopefully. And Don Pridemore running for state senate. So what's our goal? Our goal is to really provoke us as the church to stand for the faith and not roll over and just let people trample God's word and God's law. And that is able to be done if the church would literally be strong and what I would call involved. So finally, go to handtohelp.com and check out the books and the videos and the music. And tonight we did have a little bit of internet connection problem at the beginning, but that has been resolved. One reason for that has been the amount of people that are actually on the internet has increased drastically. Thank you so much for listening to The Light of Truth.